as the climate continues to change, we're seeing sea level rise, we're seeing warming of our planets. Lots of things are happening, more forest fires, more flooding events, more extreme weather events. People are now becoming more impacted. And once they're impacted or someone they love is impacted, that's when they take it more seriously. And that's when you start to see people making those family communicated plans and building those disaster kits. But unfortunately, it's not until it impacts them directly that a lot of people really care about it.
I'm George Siegel, and this is the Tell Us How to Make It Better podcast. Every week, we introduce you to people who are working on real-world problems and providing actual solutions. Tell Us How to Make It Better is partnering with The Readiness Lab, the home for podcasts, webinars, and training in the field of emergency and disaster services. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me on today's Tell Us How to Make It Better podcast. Every week on this podcast, I try to introduce you to somebody who has identified a problem and is doing something to try to make it better. If you enjoy what you listen to today, it would be great if you could become a regular follower, share the link with your friends, and if you leave a review, that would be great also. My guest today is meteorologist, lifestyle travel expert, and founder of Prepare with Cher LLC, Cheryl Nelson. Cheryl, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so honored to be a part of this today.
No, I really appreciate your time. Now, there's a million things that you've done and are doing that I want to talk about. But first, I'm sure a lot of people know you. Let's see how much they really know about you. And I'm not stealing this from your podcast, although I did hear it in something that you did. I'm stealing it from another podcaster. And that is, tell us something that people probably don't know about you.
Oh, I love this question. I put so much of my life on social media, but one thing you might not know about me is my favorite cuisine. Do you have any guesses?
Well, you know, I'll end up making an ass out of myself if I guess something stupid. I would say something Italian cuisine.
That's actually a good guess because I'm half Italian, believe it or not. But my favorite cuisine, I'm a vegan and I love Ethiopian food. So my recommendation is always get the veggie combo because it's like a party in your mouth. So many different fun flavors and spices. Every time I go to a big city, I look up an Ethiopian restaurant. No joke.
Interesting. Now, are you vegan and gluten-free or just vegan?
So vegan and gluten-free. It's kind of funny how this happened. So I'd been vegetarian for a very long time since I was a teenager. Then I found out I was lactose intolerant, egg intolerant, gluten intolerant, and that's how I became the gluten-free vegan.
Yep. You live in my world. And you know, the thing that I find every time I go out a lot of places lately, the only thing some places have are macaroons.
Oh.
And maybe you like them. I don't. I feel like that's kind of a slap in the face to us gluten-free people that you have this whole bakery full of stuff. And then here's these macaroons, and that's all you thought that we would like. So I'm probably seeing it differently than you. I'm not a macaroon guy.
Yeah, the macaroons are okay, although I prefer a cupcake any day.
Absolutely. I've got a ton of places that have that. And then the other question, you do so many things that look like fun. I was watching your reel, but if you didn't have to work today and you were told to just go out and have a good time, what would you choose to do for fun?
Ooh, all right. I would go down to Norfolk International Airport, book a ticket, and I would go somewhere tropical. I'd go to the Caribbean. That's what I would do. Go home, right? That's I'm going.
And you just have to hope that the flight doesn't get canceled.
Exactly. Yes.
That's the thing you'd have to root for. Okay, so let's jump right into this. What is the problem or issue that you say you work on? Because my podcast is all about people trying to make it better. Tell us what you work on.
So I do a lot of focus on preparedness. I focus a lot on natural disaster preparedness. I'm a degreed meteorologist. So I want people, their families, their pets to be prepared for natural disasters. And I also want people to be prepared for anything that life throws their way, whether it be at home or travel preparedness, just because there's so many unknowns, there's so many things that could happen. It's always good to have a plan B.
Now, as you know very well, and I know, having worked in the news business for a number of years, we're always doing stories, especially back in the weather department. We find out just how unprepared people are, even when you tell them to be prepared. I remember that big ice storm that happened last year. It was in the Mid-Atlantic or Northeast somewhere, where all those people got stranded, and it was not a surprise storm.
Yes, so you're right.
Why are people so unprepared?
Oh, it's the million-dollar question. And I've actually gone out and I've done the man on the street interviews asking people about this and asking generic questions like, what do you have in your disaster preparedness kit? It's funny because people can only name food and water, and they can't name a lot of the other basic necessities that you should have in the kit. Things like a flash drive with all your documents and important information, a first aid kit, flashlight and batteries, blanket. There's so many items that you should have both at home and in your vehicle. But people think, it's probably not going to happen to me. I don't need to spend time doing that. I think that's the main thing. They think I'm going to be okay. Nothing's going to happen. It's the same reason why people drive their cars through floodwaters, because they think, oh yeah, I'll get through, no problem. And then all of a sudden the car becomes a boat and it turns off. But so that's one of the reasons they don't think it'll happen, or maybe it's too expensive, which I understand, to buy some of these supplies and to prepare. I hate to say people are too lazy. I don't want to say that, but maybe people are just going, maybe tomorrow, that type of thing. Or people just might think, all right, life's going to throw whatever it throws at me. But there's a lot of reasons why they don't prepare. But I think as the climate continues to change, we're seeing sea level rise, we're seeing warming of our planets, lots of things are happening, more forest fires, more flooding events, more extreme weather events. People are now becoming more impacted. And once they're impacted, or someone they love is impacted, that's when they take it more seriously. And that's when you start to see people making those family communicated plans and building those disaster kits. But unfortunately, it's not until it impacts them directly that a lot of people really care about it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that Hurricane Preparedness Month, at least in all the markets I've been in, is always in May. And my argument is always, that's a little late now. It may be good for getting your kit together, but as far as fixing up your house and finding what your vulnerabilities are, it should be done in the middle of winter. It should be done in January, saying, okay, look, now you can find a contractor to come out and fix your windows. You can find somebody to make sure your roof is functioning properly. Yet people don't do it. And it's a constant barrage of, once the accident happens, then it's people complaining that nobody's coming to help them and that they're now victims. So I don't know what it works either. I mean, a wake-up call, you think, in my documentary film, The Last House Standing, Moore, Oklahoma had to have 8 major tornadoes hit them before they changed the building code.
Oh my goodness.
I might have changed it after one, it's and in Mexico Beach, a Category 5 hurricane hits them and they're not building to withstand if another Category 5 hits. So what do you find with people's mentality? I know you do man on the street stuff, but when you put a preparedness kit right in front of them, there's people that still won't do it because they just don't expect it to happen.
Right. And a lot of people think they're almost like, oh, too macho for that, where they're not going to, I'm not going to waste my time doing that. I can handle it. I don't need a preparedness kit. I've got the supplies. And so a lot of people think that way. And then you have the other side of the spectrum, and you have the preppers, which they're great because they have everything they need for probably weeks, months, years down the road, and they're prepared. But it's really a division in how people think, and trying to get them to do something, I think the financial piece of it is probably the biggest. They are putting off other projects and they're saying, well, I really need to redo my closet and I wanted to spend my money on that. So why should I buy a generator that I might not use? And so when you look at it that way, and then I say, okay, what if something happened, hurricane, winter storm, and you're left without power, not just for hours, but days or weeks? That happened in Puerto Rico with Hurricane Maria. Then what? Oh, then you're going to wish you spent money on that generator, right? Because if it's wintertime, how are you going to stay warm? If it's summer, you're going to be sweating like crazy without air conditioning. So you have to ask them those questions. And then when you really put them in that scenario and make them think, and then they go, oh, yeah, you're right. I hate being hot. Maybe she's onto something.
So what's the code? I have a generator. My neighbor decides they want to go buy a new RV or they want to go on a trip. The storm hits. They're without power for 2 weeks. I'm sitting here doing laundry and living a good life. What's your obligation to the community to help all the people who chose to do nothing?
Isn't that the hard part?
Yeah.
That is such a bad scenario because you kind of want all of that energy for yourself and your own family. And if you let the whole neighborhood come into your house, then what? Generators only get to last so long if you have a portable one. If you have a home standby generator, then that's a different story. But those obviously a lot of people don't have. So it's one of those things where I think you have to communicate with your neighbors. Say, hey, look, I got a generator. I think you should get one too, because you're not going to want to look over here and see my lights on if you're sitting in the dark. Just kind of get everybody to come together and maybe do it. My uncle actually did that in Florida. He decided to buy a home standby generator for his whole house. And he really talked it up and he told his neighbors about it. And he and three other neighbors all bought home standby generators.
That's really smart. And that's going to be a real dilemma, I guess, if something bad happens. I almost called my film The Third Pig because I love the story of the three little pigs. I just didn't think it was as marketable as the last house standing. But it really makes sense to be that third pig, to be that one that's prepared. But the other people seem to live on the edge. I live in a neighborhood where there's a lot of older homes and a lot of newer homes combined. So you have a home at sea level and then you have a home at 10 feet elevation. And it's hard to get flood insurance. I mean, people really are rolling the dice when they choose where to live.
Mm. It's amazing to me, some of the houses that are on the market and you look at them and the backyard. I remember when we were house hunting, the backyard was like a sponge. You walk on it and it's squish, squish, squish. And the water was right there. And I'm thinking, okay, you get a good nor'easter in here, tropical storm, this whole thing is going to be underwater. And then I looked at the flood zone and the flood maps and going, okay, we're not buying that. But a lot of this stuff, it's supposed to be disclosed, but people, some of them are not educated enough to know to look for that and to know what that means. So they're kind of blinded by the beauty of the home and they're going, ooh, I want this. And they don't look at anything else around it or what could happen as sea levels rise or floods happen. It's one of those things where they just tunnel vision and they have to look at the big picture.
I think most people know, we could probably tell you more about the safety features of their car than they could about the safety features of their house. And the house is our most valuable investment. It's just mind-boggling.
You're so right. My husband showed me how to turn off the water and the circuit breakers and all that stuff. He goes, you need to know where all of this stuff is. And a lot of people probably wouldn't know. A lot of people probably don't know where the fire extinguisher is in their house. And that's a scary thought to think about because home fires. And then what about, speaking of fires, makes me think of evacuation. Do people know evacuation routes, not just from wildfires out west, but also hurricanes? Do you have those maps? Do you know where to go? Do you have a place to go? Have you even thought about it?
Yeah, that's a tough one. And it kind of ties into the weather business in a way. I know that when you look at evacuating, for example, Florida, being on a peninsula, there's only so many places you can go where the storm might not turn. You really have to go pretty far north. And what I think is interesting, when there's a near miss early in the season, and the weather gal or guy says, hey, you better get out, you better leave, and then the storm misses you, The next time they don't take you as seriously.
That is the worst. That happens. They say all those meteorologists do is they cry wolf. It's not going to happen. But that's when it does happen. When they say that and they think, we were fine last time, we'll be fine this time. But you can't have that mentality because every storm is different. Every storm. They're all different sizes, different intensities. They approach the land at different angles. They move at different speeds. And people don't realize that. A Category 2 last year is not going to be the same as a Category 2 storm this year. Yes, it will in the terms of wind speed, but you got to factor in everything else, like the storm surge and also the beach erosion, the heavy rains, the tornado risk. There's so many other risks and hazards associated with these tropical cyclones that people need to realize.
I think people also need to understand that weather, as brilliant as you meteorologists may be, it's not an exact science.
Right.
And it does change. I worked for a guy, or was a woman somewhere along the way, that we were never allowed to say when the forecast was wrong. And I'd say, but people aren't stupid. You know, if I told you it was going to be sunny on Saturday and it rains on your picnic, you hate me at that point. And Monday morning or Monday evening, I better tell you why it rained and why the forecast was wrong. But they wouldn't let us do that. The anchor always had to pat you on the back and give you an attaboy saying, you nailed another one, George. Great job. Did you ever work for people like that?
Wow.
Yeah.
No, not like that, but I do have a story. This is when I worked for the NBC affiliate in Norfolk, and I was filling in on the morning show. So I was the morning meteorologist, and there was a big snowstorm coming. And snow in Norfolk, Virginia Beach, big deal. We only average about 5 inches a year, and many of the years we have zero. So when there's a big storm, 5 to 7 inches of snow were forecast, people are getting super excited. So school superintendents, they are being proactive. They canceled all the schools the night before. Okay. So then I come in that morning, I get in around 3 a.m. I'm looking at the radar and I'm going, well, that's not good. Stars are out. Skies are clear. And the storm coming up from the south, it's having trouble making it across the North Carolina, Virginia state line. And I'm going, okay, well, I lowered the forecast to 1 to 3 inches of snow. So I was saying that I didn't want to go from all to nothing. That's crazy. The other meteorologists were still going 5 to 7. And so I was explaining what was happening. Hey, the air is really dry. A lot of this precipitation is evaporating before it reaches the ground. It's having a hard time moving north, that type of thing. And then by the end of the morning news, I think it was 9 a.m., sun was out, no snow on the ground anywhere in Virginia. North Carolina did get a few inches of snow, so our county's there verified. But my news director comes in to the weather center, slams her hand on the desk, and she goes, "What happened?" And so I had to tell her what happened. And we did. We explained it. We explained it on the noon show. The chief meteorologist explained it again at 5 and 6. He basically said, hey guys, look, sorry, but I've never gotten so many mean emails and posts in my life. People told me to jump off a bridge. My dog can forecast better than you. You dumb blonde beeping bimbo. You should give your degree back. And then another one, this one was actually pretty clever. A guy sent a picture of his little boy, probably 2 years old, on a sled in the grass, crying.
That's a good one. Yeah. When I was working in Detroit, we would put tornado warnings on the air with the crawl.
Oh, yeah.
And people were mad that we were partially obscuring a WNBA basketball game.
Oh.
Because we were telling them that a tornado could be hitting their house. So you can't make anyone happy. And you have to assume that they'll remember it the rest of their lives. When I was a little kid living in New York, we were actually in Connecticut. I was in New York City at my grandmother's. I was going to spend New Year's with her, and there was a snowstorm forecast. So my dad drove all the way to the city to get me so I wouldn't get stuck there. It didn't snow an inch, nothing, zero. And now as an old guy, I remember that like it was yesterday. So I think people, when it comes to preparing for disasters, I think people are stupid, but they don't forget a bad forecast.
They don't. I was in the gym a few weeks after that no snow event. And some guy came up to me and said, wow, you're brave to show your face in here.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. I don't control the weather.
Yep. That is a tough one. So, you know, when I sent you the questions that I wanted to talk about, the second question was, how does this problem affect people's lives? I think we've gone over that in a way, the lack of preparedness, but that shouldn't stop people. They should really take a moment and focus and say, there's things that are very easy to get. Even if I'm strapped financially, there's things I probably should be doing right now.
Yes, absolutely. I always tell people, look, I know we're all on a budget. The way gas prices are, we're spending money that we didn't think that we would be spending. But maybe instead of getting that coffee every single day, maybe skip a day where you don't get the coffee and make a list. Make a list and say, this is what I want to buy this week. This is what I want to buy next week. And we're just talking about the basic supplies. Do you have maybe some canned goods or non-perishable foods? that are not expired, just sitting around, something that you could eat, maybe some peanut butter if you didn't have electricity, that type of thing. Get some bottled water, I have a distiller actually, which is fantastic. And we have that, and we just save up bottles and bottles of water. So we have plenty of water for drinking and for bathing. The NOAA weather radio is key to get the warning notifications, because as you know, a lot of the times cell phones, they get kind of crazy when there's disasters and you might not get alerts. So it's always good to have that. Flashlight, batteries. We all know with COVID now, it's good to have the hand sanitizer, the masks. There's just so many things that people can have that are easy. And a lot of these are not expensive. One thing people don't think about is having a local map of your area. And they're going, why would I need that? I have GPS. Well, guess what? If there's trees down blocking roads, GPS isn't working. How are you going to know where you are or where you're going? So it's always good to have a paper map. And a lot of this stuff is more affordable than people might think.
Yeah, my family always yells at me when the NOAA weather radio goes off with the warning. And I said, you know, that's a good thing that it's telling us that. We might want to actually listen to it. I was on WLS AM last Friday talking about the topic was, because of how bad the economy is and how people are struggling with prices of gas, will that probably stop people from preparing and evacuating in the event of a storm this year? And my answer was, yeah, I absolutely think it'll be an excuse for people. And I know people that probably might say, I don't need to renew my insurance. It's too expensive. Nothing's going to happen to me, or I'm going to change my deductible. You can get wiped out with decisions like that.
Ooh, you really can. And that's a scary thought when you think about it. For example, I compare home insurance, car insurance to health insurance. You could be the healthiest person in the world, and then all of a sudden, bam, an illness comes out of nowhere and it gets you and you're sick for months. And I say this because this actually happened to me. Had I not had insurance, we're talking several hundred thousand dollars that I would have been in debt. So the moral of the story is, yes, it could happen to you. Yes, you need to be prepared. Yes, it's worth it to have insurance. And people you just got to get through to them and say, you don't want to pay for this otherwise, and say, oh, I wish I would have, should have, could have, that kind of thing. Better be safe than sorry.
Yep. And there's a couple areas that you probably will agree with, that the deductible, for example, if you have hail damage or something happens to your roof, some people have a very high deductible on that. And I know I heard a story recently of people who had damage to their roof and they had to come up with $30,000 out of pocket because the deductible was a percentage of their value. Mm. So people need to talk to their insurance agent and get a good understanding of what coverage they have, because there's a lot of differences there.
Oh, yes. And I know there's special earthquake insurance too in some areas, and the flood insurance. There's that 30-day waiting period. So if you see a hurricane approaching, that's not the time to sign up for flood insurance, because you have to wait 30 days before it takes effect. People don't realize that either. And the other thing, they look at the flood maps and they think, I'm not in a flood zone. I'm fine. Well, we're seeing the 100-year flood more often. And the 100-year flood is something that typically occurs once every 100 years. But with climate change, we're seeing more of these extreme weather events happening more frequently, where all of a sudden, like what we saw with Hurricane Harvey in Texas, mm-hmm. you get 40, 50 inches of rain. And all of a sudden, your non-flood zone is a flood zone.
What we learned from that for our film was, for $300 or $400, people could have had flood insurance, because if you're not in a flood zone, it's not expensive.
Right.
And yeah, we interviewed Brock Long, the FEMA director at the time, and he said, if it rains where your house is, it can flood.
Yes.
Period.
Yes.
So everybody should have or think about having flood insurance.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's just one of those things, like health insurance, like I said before, it's important to have.
And to understand that collector car in your garage that you think is paid for, or that coin collection that's worth a lot, or that house that you got as a legacy house that didn't have a mortgage, so you don't have insurance, it still has a value and it has a replacement value. Oof. But people don't think about that.
No, they don't. And we have to definitely change our mentality on that. It is worth it. I'll admit, I hate writing the checks or paying those bills. I hate it because you feel like you're taking money and you're just throwing it away, but you're not. It's a cover your butt type of situation.
Yeah. In Detroit, we used to have stories on the news every year where when there was flooding, people would set their house on fire because they had fire insurance, but they didn't have flood insurance. And eventually they're going to investigate. What I always tell people is they don't just give you the money when you make a claim. They're going to investigate the claim. And you can't lie to them at that point. Their mm-hmm. goal is not to pay you, in right. my opinion. Don't give them a reason.
Oh, man. People need to realize, too, that sometimes following a disaster, you yourself are your own first responder a lot of the times. You can't rely on everybody to come help you when you and all your neighbors need help. So you have to rely on yourself, your family, maybe some of your immediate neighbors. But FEMA might not get in there for quite some time to give you the assistance that you need. That can be scary. And that's the other reason why you should have a plan and be prepared and have the insurance.
So when you tell people that they need to evacuate, how important is it that people listen to that advice?
If your town, city, if they issue a mandatory evacuation, go. They're saying that for a reason. They've been collaborating with emergency managers, with meteorologists, local officials. They're saying this is dangerous. Mandatory evacuation orders. A lot of that, like with Katrina, they flat out said this is not survivable when Katrina hit Louisiana and New Orleans. And so when that type of thing is issued, as much as you don't want to go, you got to go and you got to be ready to go. You got to have your stuff packed that you want to take. Take your pets with you, please. The people who leave animals behind breaks my heart. Animals are part of the family. Always research hotels ahead of time that accept pets. That way you know where you can go, or maybe a friend or a family member out of town where you can go and bring them. But don't roll the dice. And if Jim Cantore from the Weather Channel shows up in your town for a hurricane, that's not a good thing. Jim Cantore is a buddy of mine. He's a friend. And I know this. When he's in town, you probably should get out of town.
Yeah, no, I love him. I will watch every storm. And I think those guys do an amazing job. But I do always scratch my head going, why are they really out there risking their lives? I had a news director that when there was a tsunami warning, used to send us down to the beach.
Excuse me? Oh, no.
And my thought process was, okay, they're probably just thinking it's a joke, but there was enough of a thing that they issued the warning. Mm. Why are we going down there to cover that? Shouldn't we be going the other way? Ooh. And so it's just mind boggling.
That drives me crazy. Tsunamis, that's what you don't mess with a tsunami, first of all. Mm. I have nightmares about tsunamis. And the other thing that drives me crazy is, and I've worked in news, you've worked in news, we know the news directors want to get the footage, the best video, the first ones to capture everything. But when you're in an area that has a lot of trees or heavily wooded, like much of the East Coast, why do you have storm chasers? And let's send a reporter out in the car and go try to go into the tornado warned area and try to get some video. I'm sorry, but they are not trained to go and storm chase. That is so dangerous, even to send a meteorologist out there. If that meteorologist is not used to storm chasing, or if everything is so obstructed by trees, what are you doing? I'm going to get on my soapbox about that one. I know I've been out there in a few storms myself where I felt like I was going to blow away. I'm not a big person, so it doesn't take much to blow me around. But some of the places they go, the flying debris and you see stop signs flying by and tree branches and that type of thing, it's not safe. And I'm glad that a lot of them are wearing helmets now and they're wearing goggles and at least some of that protective gear, because that could be really scary.
But you're right. They do know the safer areas. They understand where the storm's coming from, what structures to be behind. Yes. Other people should not even be out there messing around with that stuff.
No. And I wish we could talk to news directors about this very issue. Say, hey, guys, look, think about what you're doing here. What would happen if all of a sudden there's the tornado? Oh, great. You got live footage of it. But then it picks up your news vehicle and your photog and your reporter, and that's it.
They don't care. They just want to know that you're still rolling. I worked for a guy that used to get so excited when bad things were happening to other people. When we had this flood in San Antonio in 2018, houses were washing away. And this little guy was running around so excited that all this destruction was happening because he wanted ratings. And it just, so nothing, yeah, nothing surprised me. Did you ever go up in the Hurricane Hunter plane?
I did. I didn't get to go during an actual hurricane, but it was during Hurricane Awareness Week. And so they took me up on a flight with them. They were flying from one hurricane awareness stop to the next one. It was down, I think, two stops in Florida, but they let me take control of the plane for a minute. Wow. Oh yeah. It was really cool.
You go. I wouldn't get in that plane. My boss wanted me to go during a hurricane, and I'm too much of a wuss to do something
really?
Like that.
Really?
Yeah, if the storm, my attitude is if the storm's coming from the east, I'm going west.
You're so funny. I guess I'm an adventure junkie. I think you saw in my reel, I flew with the Blue Angels as well.
I was going to ask you about that. Did you get sick? You were talking about getting sick.
Should I tell people or should I have them watch?
I couldn't tell from watching because I was multitasking. It looked like you bent down like you did get sick. Let's bust the myth right here. Did you get sick?
All right. Okay. So I pulled 7.4 G. I will say that they don't give you G suits or anything. I did that. My vision went black. I almost passed out. All the oxygen, it was crazy. And I remember saying, everything is black. I can't see. Everything's black. And then slowly the vision came back into my eyes. But shortly after that, I got sick.
Yeah. See, I wouldn't want to be that, that blooper video or that moment. I don't even like Ferris wheels. And I was doing a live shot one time and they set me up and turned it on during the weather forecast. And fortunately that was before social media and everything. So you're a heck of a lot braver and gung ho than I am. I don't think I would put myself in that position.
Oh man.
So good for you. So what advice would you have? It seems like you have a true entrepreneurial spirit of doing things and you genuinely want to make things better with the things that you do. What would you tell the person sitting out there with an idea or a thought that they have to get them motivated to do it so they could just try to do some of the stuff that you do?
Yeah. So as far as preparing for disasters, I always try to make it relatable to them. And I would say, who do you love the most in your life? Who could you not live without? And for some people, it's, my spouse, my kids, my pets. And I say, okay, imagine if you were not home and that loved one or that animal was home alone and you had no plan, no disaster kit, you had no neighbor to check on kids, pets, and something happened to them. How would you feel? And then they go, oh man, when you put it that way. I said, exactly. Because a lot of people don't want to prepare for themselves, but they'll prepare for their loved ones.
And you want to encourage them to do it in advance. When we were covering the fires in Malibu, we were with a fire mitigation expert. He said, no one wakes up the day of the fire and makes their plan.
No.
The planning comes early.
Yeah, you have to sit down and make that plan, a family communicated plan that everybody in your family knows. Where's your family meeting place if you get separated? How do you turn off electricity or gas in the house? Where are you going to keep your disaster kit? Do you have money in cash and single dollar bills? Do you have an out-of-town relative you could contact or a place you could go? You have to write all this stuff out ahead of time and make sure everybody in your family knows. And then too, there's your parents. What if they're older or your grandparents? Do they have a plan? Is somebody going to care for them? You don't want, if they're not mobile, you got to make sure that they can get to safety as well. So these things, these discussions have to happen while the weather is quiet.
Yeah, there was a great one that we saw from this woman in Malibu. She had a go box and she had a note in the go box of things to grab in her house if they had to evacuate. Because you see that commercial where people are, I think it's a car commercial where a meteor is heading towards them. And they're just grabbing stupid stuff out of their house because they have a big car. But you really have to think about that because you only get one chance at that.
Mm-hmm. That's a really, really good point. And for me, I've got four cats. So I would get my four cat carriers and wrangle all the cats up and get them in there. I've got my disaster kit in a backpack, which has most of my supplies in it. And then probably just a couple, you know, keepsake, memento, sentimental items. But it's scary to think about that. Because I know the stuff we have around us in the house, it's just stuff. But I'm a sentimental person. And I know it would be devastating to lose a lot of this stuff. So that's a good thing to think about in advance. What would you want to take with you?
Now, I don't know the answer, so I'm going to ask you this anyway. Are you a geek like me? If a movie like San Andreas or The Day After Tomorrow or Twister comes on, even though you know it's embellished, do you watch?
I do. I just saw Twister on TV a couple of weeks ago. It was on. I wasn't doing anything. And I, all right, let's watch Twister. Yes, I love these movies.
Yeah, it's hard to turn away. Even though you know they're taking some liberties.
Yeah.
It's still fun to watch.
Ah, I know. We all love that theatrical make-believe type of stuff. But what's scary is some of this stuff is becoming reality in some places with the extreme weather events on the rise. So while it's fun to watch on TV, we don't want it to happen to us in real life.
Absolutely. And storms are intensifying so quickly now. I mean, we see that all the time where you think it's going to be a little storm. Just that first tropical wave that moved through Florida this year. I mean, I don't even know if it was a tropical wave when it hit, dropped 10, 12 inches of rain in places.
People don't realize that when storms are in their infant stage, tropical depressions, tropical storms, they think, oh, it's just a tropical depression, just a tropical storm. But they don't realize that if it's slow moving enough, or if it's large in size, it doesn't matter if it's a hurricane or a tropical depression. You got to look at that when you look at that cone and see if the cone is really fat from the National Hurricane Center, then that means it's moving really, really slow. If the cone is long and skinny over time, that means that the storm is moving fast. So if you see a shorter, fatter cone over days where it's just Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all kind of in the same place, that means you're going to get a lot of rain.
And if you see Jim Cantore, run like hell.
Yes. Yeah, you know, you want to see Jim Cantore after the storm, not when the storm's bearing down on your area.
Exactly. Now, you have a ton of stuff out there for people to consume. What's the best way for people to follow you and get in touch with you? It'll all be in the show notes. I have all your social media. But what's the best way for people to follow you?
Fabulous. So I am at Cheryl Nelson TV on all my social media platforms. My website has more tips and other information on it about preparedness and natural disasters. And that website is preparewithshare.com.
Excellent. Well, listen, Cheryl, thank you so much for coming on today. I know how busy you are, and I really appreciate your time, and I look forward to continuing to follow you.
Absolutely. It's been so much fun. Thank you.
That's going to do it for this episode of the Tell Us How to Make a Better podcast. I hope you'll check out the show notes to find out all the ways you can follow or get in touch with Cheryl. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.